FEMIN now is the mix of female and innovation. The reason we started it has two layers. So first, it's the local layer. We realized that we have the potential to unite in a different way, the local technology, innovative environment, ecosystem. On the other hand, which is not less important, we realized that it is a good time to show Armenia as a hub for female talent and leadership.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the EVN Disrupt podcast. My name is Nejda. I'm the editor of the creative tech section here at EVN Report. Our guest today was Seda Papoyan, the founder of Femino, a female innovation conference and platform. We spoke about how Seda got involved in advocacy for girls and women in STEM fields, the actual reality around women in tech in the country, and the upcoming Femino conference. Thank you for listening. Seda, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure being here.
I want to start with some of your background. Tell me how you got involved in the world of tech and advocating for women in tech.
That's a very interesting question, actually, because people usually think I am tech in my background, but that's not the case. I started my university with a major in art history, then dived more into cultural project management, but I always was a journalist by my nature. So I started doing some practical journalism at school, then went more into communication, and that actually brought me to tech. But when I look back, when people ask me how you got here, why are you doing what you are doing now, I usually say that it's maybe the root reason somewhere is because no one else back in my childhood was there like me to kind of show what's going on in the world, what diverse opportunities there are for girls, also for girls. Otherwise, I may choose something in chemistry. And that was actually, I now when look back, I think that that's a childhood trauma in a way, and that brought me here to inspire more girls into what potentially is their passion and interest in life.
Is that something you only understood when you were older and you looked back on it? Or was there that feeling even when you were a kid?
It was not a feeling any time. It's only now when I look back.
Yeah.
And actually, I never had a lack of support from the family, which is usually the case for a number of girls in Armenia, in the regions especially. My parents were open to anything I would choose for myself. But I was more, impressed by what people were saying about me. Oh, you're so good in languages, you're so good in humanities, whatever. And then I had a bad experience with chemistry teacher, so which is unfortunately common for a number of schools still in Armenia. And that's how I chose something people were saying I'm good in. So basically, I chose art, history, and things like that. I would not say I regret doing it, but potentially Armenia, and that was a point I made in my TEDx talk last year, that Armenia most probably missed or lost the scientist in me. But instead, I am happy doing something that at least supports the environment for a number of other girls now, so that they don't lose their some potential, which Armenia can benefit from.
It's interesting. As a kid, you're never mature enough to realize if you're being limited in some way by external factors that are unfair or unjust. So that's why it's so important for adults in kids' lives, whether it be teachers, parents, and just the surrounding network to create the most equitable and opportunity-rich environment for them, right? And just to show them that there's nothing limiting them from any particular avenue, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, especially now when I already have practical experience of creating that environment and seeing the results of those environments that we create as an organization, then I totally realized that that's where the lack that in a number of cases, the situations lack in Armenia, in Yerevan, but mostly in the regions. Mm-hmm. So basically, that's where we work towards.
How young of an age is can you start doing that kind of work with?
Well, if we're speaking about STEM, which is my passion for years now, like kind of inspiring more girls and kids into STEM fields, STEM fields, it's as early as possible. Like even in kindergarten, what is STEM basically? It's now I am happy to see that more and more, and in Armenia as well, it's how to say validated as the basis for 21st century education, mm-hmm. as it is, because it's like basically understanding how the world works. Yeah. So we don't say that everyone needs to get into STEM, but we say that everyone needs to have a basic minimum knowledge how the world works, right. as it is. So the earlier kids start understanding the world around them, the easier it is for them to start exploring things which are more interesting to them, and also kind of starting contributing to the areas which they are better in potentially. So going back to your question, even in kindergarten, if the setup and environment is in a way more explorative, mm-hmm. Towards various things, how this sugar gets, like how we, when we mix, how it melts, mm-hmm. dissolves, and then whatever. So there comes the reasons that kids start thinking about the world. So basically, from the kindergarten and then early ages, of course, at school, and then towards the towards some middle school, that when they start exploring science, that it is, mm-hmm. They should already know that this is the field I feel better in a way. But unfortunately, in our case, for example, I keep seeing kids, pupils at school, who like kind of being afraid of, next year we're starting chemistry and physics already.
Right.
Well, that's something they should like looking forward to instead of being afraid, you know? Right. So that's again about the environment and the setup and the mindset, and you know, they hear everything at home from their you know, elder mm-hmm. brothers and sisters.
Right. And having that early exposure makes it less scary,
I guess.
Let's talk about Girls in Tech in Armenia. This is the organization that you helped get off the ground in Armenia. Tell us what its mission was and what it did.
Yep.
What it still does, I should say.
Of course. Yeah. So it was year 2016 when my background, I was already in tech education, in more in communication and stuff like that. But then, and also started working with young ages already. And because my, as a feminist woman, I was always very much interested in whatever touches women's lives, mm-hmm. I somehow found Girls in Tech as a network, and that was the spark to understand that this is something I really want to. There is the reason, there is the passion, and there is the opportunity. But when I was, when the first time I initiated an event, a small one, actually it was a live hybrid event. I connected someone from the US with a small group on the ground, and that was the first ever event of Girls in Tech Armenia. But I was testing whether this is something interesting, mm-hmm. Or maybe I'm wrong, or no one will show up. And that was an event, like one person event, that being me as an organizer, and there were about 30 young women, mm-hmm. who just for the idea of Girls in Tech Armenia, they showed up. So there was a workshop on confidence building, I remember. Mm-hmm. So after that, I just approached some of those participants and said, okay, if you were interested in this, then potentially you can just join me and let's see what we can do together towards this field. So that was the start. Then we were really good in, by the end of the year 2017, or already organized a model program from the global programming.
Because Girls in Tech is an international organization.
Yes, as an international organization, having like model programs for all chapters, and there was a hackathon in like it was called Hacking for Humanity to cover a social problem, and we were really good in engaging already the local ecosystem for who it was basically a totally new idea, kind of to discuss or engage a conversation about girls, women in technology. And I'm happy, and I will not be humble enough not to mention that also thanks to those activities that at some point, and now especially, women in tech topic is one of the hottest in the environment. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to see more and more international organizations focusing a lot on that. It's a hot topic all over the globe, but I am happy to kind of pioneering the wave of starting it. It grew up for several years as Girls in Tech. And then after the COVID year, which was not only COVID, but war and the whole change in the Armenian ecosystem, we realized that we need to finally start something that, because we had the enough potential for it, to start something which would represent Armenia on the global map, kind of to start from Armenia, to grow from here, having enough potential, having the vibe of enough participation of women in the field. So basically that's how we started Femino.
Right. Just before we get to Femino, I want to stay on Girls in Tech for a minute. If you can paint us a picture of what the tech landscape for girls and women looked like in 2016, and now that the organization has been around for 8 years, what are some tangible changes that you've seen thanks to the work that you guys have been doing?
I would mention several words that would describe better. First, it's participation. I would not say that like we pushed more and more girls, but because of the activities that we did, actually the whole picture that we cover is towards engaging, educating, and empowering women into technology. So with various tools and methods working towards these three directions, we were really good in engaging attention, first of all. Mm-hmm. And after that attention, we managed to bring in some more numbers. But then one thing which is always important, it's visibility. So the more we showed examples, like the role modeling, the easier it started to look for a number of young girls. So basically that was very important to kind of open up the field, and there it came. There are more and more young and even not so young people from various other professions who just realized that, well, it's enough for me working in a bank for 10 years. Mm-hmm. I want something really as vibrant as a startup is. Right. So let me just start some coding, etc. So it was very important to open up the field as it is, to show what's happening around, to start the conversation, I would say, and this conversation that started, and I don't know when it will finish, but it's still very active and hot. And that conversation is what helps changing things on the go.
Right. A lot of well-meaning but naive people might ask a question like, why, on the topic of representation, they might ask a question like, Why is it important for the role model to be a woman, for example? Like a lot of young boys look up to a woman role model. A lot of young girls might look like to a male role model. Can you explain to someone who might not get, especially from a guy's perspective, I think guys probably don't understand that as well as women and girls do. Why is representation actually important? Like we talk about it a lot, but what's the root of it?
Well, imagine, especially when we talk, it's the same actually all over the world, but I would mention like one very important specifics being in Armenia. Imagine a young Armenian girl looking up to a male, someone professional as a role model. It's not something that will happen. So basically it is very, and it's not only in Armenia, but especially considering a lot of societal norms and, you know, limitations, etc. It is very important to see someone you potentially can become. You can never, a young student at school would never imagine reaching the heights of a male at some, managerial C-suite level, speaking about any success in the field. And also, it's not only just the person, but it's also the field when everyone speaks about, oh, this is the... People would argue that it's not the case now, but even for several years back, I was like sitting in front of my desk reading data from a research, which was saying that majority of school teachers in Armenia keep talking to their female students in a way like, oh no, this physics, math, etc., it's not for you. Choose something. And that was the majority of teachers, even those who were teaching physics, chemistry, etc. So basically it's the mindset and it's the change of mindset that should work. And going back to the question, if it's important, it is important to show role models in the field where potentially you would not think getting into to make the path easier or at least imaginary, you know, so that I can imagine that, well, if this woman could do that, especially when it's someone who speaks the same language, it's someone who comes from the same country, more or less from the same environment. And I have very good examples through our practice that how even the families who were, imagine a small village, there is one girl somehow reaches Yerevan studies, and at some point she reaches to certain level in tech, whatever the narrow profession, and then she earns well, she has the reputation, etc. Then the neighbor family then says, oh well, if she could living like next door, then you can do the same. So it's very common to kind of recognize those people, you know, like you.
Great answer. Like sometimes we try to look at things as from such a logical, just strictly logical perspective, but we forget that the human condition sometimes just requires the simple act of seeing something happen to have such a great magnifying power on it. Humans are strange that way. Let's get to Femina. So 2 years ago, you guys organized what was the largest conference in the region focusing on empowering women in tech. And this year will be the third rendition of it. Tell us what Femina is and what your goal with it is.
Yes. So this was, as I said, a kind of logical development of what we were doing as a team on the ground and what was what I would say would be a dream achieved. We when at the beginning of the year 2022, I talked to the team that was a very serious meeting of, you know, this is that it's high time doing it. Then some of the team members even thought, do you think it will, we can make it? And now those same people look back and say, okay, I'm happy I was a part of that journey. We started it actually, first the name Femino is the mix of female and innovation. The reason we started it has for me as someone in the visionary of the wave, It has two layers. So first, it's the local layer. We realize that we have the potential to unite in a different way the local technology innovative environment ecosystem, as we call it. So basically, because we realize that even though it is said that tech is a priority in economy, a lot is happening on the ground, but we keep even now seeing how people not collaborate enough with each other, different, I'd say islands, we call it. And then we realized that, I mean, we are happy to work with all of them separately, but what if we create a way to bring them all on the same platform, space, environment, and even though they may not from their own collaborate, but at least they will see each other. And I have one very good feedback after the first conference from a guy who came up to me, said, very popular guy, attending all the events, knowing almost everyone, and then he said, you know what, I thought that I know the ecosystem 90%, but with your conference, I realized that I hardly know 50 of them working on the ground. So basically, we managed in Armenia. So we managed to play this role of unifying, you know, unifier or a kind of connector, whoever it is, different, you know, players. So this is one layer that we put as a like goal. And then on the other hand, which is not less important, we realize that it is a very like it is a good time to show Armenia as a, we say, a hub for female talent and leadership in technology, in innovation, and we say women in business, science and technology. And this is also a kind of new opportunity for branding the country where there is enough potential, bringing new attention, potentially new opportunities, etc. So this is that's why we positioned ourselves as an international conference at that time, and we managed, being the first edition, bring people from Canada to Nigeria, and that's also thanks to my own network and efforts, but also thanks to the a lot of efforts that we put on the ground and work hard to achieve. So basically, it started as a conference, but then we realized that it's whatever we do is Femino. And then now, years after, Femino in Armenia is our biggest celebration. We say we celebrate female talent and leadership. But it's one important product we do, and it summarizes everything else we cover during the whole year.
Under the Femino umbrella.
Yes.
Which includes sort of satellite events around the world, right?
Yeah, the satellite is something which came as a, like, again, logical development of what we do. Because the idea actually rose being second year of preparing the conference, and because I was invited to speak at UN committee of how is it called, something on the status of women. So it was March last year, and I decided to, having a chance to be on the East Coast and meeting a number of people, I decided to kind of initiate some community meetings, because we have been following how people, starting from the years of being girls in tech, then Femino, a lot of diaspora people following us, like they were literally texting me on LinkedIn here and there, oh, we like look and we are so happy you're there. And then I just realized that, let me go and check with some people personally what would be their wish to, how would they want to get engaged personally? It's not just sending donations or just praising us from distance. And then from several community meetings along the whole East Coast, we did one in New York City and one in Boston and one in Miami. So we checked whoever was there showed up. We checked, like, we started asking people, what would you like to do, etc. And then analyzing those small meetings, we realized that it's not always the case that they may be there when you do something, mm-hmm. conference, whatever. It's important that people kind of take up their own piece of what you do. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's personal engagement. And there how we came to the idea of what if we just take the conference and start traveling with it. Yeah. Of course, we cannot do it as big as we do in Armenia, and I'm happy to keep Armenia as the main conference. And that's how we decided to call it satellites around what is the main thing in Armenia. The first satellite was planned for end October last year, and that was hard, like one of the hardest times for Armenian history, I believe. And we prepared a lot, and then came September with Artsakh developments, and we were like for 2 weeks in the time of hot preparations, we were like totally silent, doing humanitarian stuff and like thinking what should be our decision of moving on. And then I'm saying, I usually, when I tell about it, that was a political decision to say, okay, we should keep it. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, if we would cancel it, then we would be the week that some other people would like us to be. I mean, to slow down, to show the weakness that actually was there. But in order to become stronger, we decided to move on, and we kept the plan with some changes, etc. But I'm happy that about 100 people were there at San Francisco first satellite event. And from the reactions and the feedback, I mean, we were realizing that it was something important, actually, because that was our first mm-hmm. time going outside Armenia, doing something like, but then from the reactions that people, and also like constructive feedback, that this is something you should keep up, because it's not only a conference as it is, it's something, it's a value that you are able practically take out of Armenia, mm-hmm. and you should make it bigger and bigger. So there came, and we were happy to welcome so many really important people who are changing the tech ecosystem globally. From there on, of course, we realized that this is something we should continue. And there came the idea of doing the next satellite, which happened last month in Sydney. It was very symbolic doing it on the international.
You guys got the two edges yeah, of the two map. Hands.
Yeah. The story is funny how we moved next to Sydney. My parents have relatives in Australia, and they were like literally asking me years, like, please initiate a visa for us, but you should come with us because we don't want to travel alone so long. And then because it happened so that I did what they wanted, and I said, okay, wait now, because you have the visa, I have the visa with you, together with you, then let me initiate something, because I don't want to travel just for travel, and we are now in this process, let us do, because we have the base. Basically, what we do around satellites, we go to places where there is the power of Armenia diaspora. It's all over the world, I know, but still it is important to have this support environment, mechanism, and people who would welcome you on mm-hmm. the ground.
And are the participants of the satellites mostly members of the Armenian diaspora community, or is it non-Armenians as well from those cities that come?
As in the case of Yerevan conference, we try hard to engage internet, like non-Armenians, because it is really important for us to, first of all, keep being diverse. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, it is even outside Armenia, it is very important to also, in terms of value, to show how powerful Armenian community is and how people being non-Armenians, and I'm happy from already now two satellite events, see how these people who potentially knew that there are some Armenians, other nationalities living together with them, now look into the Armenian community from other perspectives, because they explored much more than mm-hmm. just knowing there are all nationalities living next door, you know. And I am happy to also manage engaging some really good names and interest of others who would potentially mm-hmm. get engaged in an initiative which is mostly Armenian, but they are happy to explore and find maybe new opportunities.
Right. I'm curious, when observing the conversations that take place in the satellites which are outside of Armenia and within the main conference track that is in Armenia, are there distinctions between the conversations, or is the experience very universal?
Oh, that's a very interesting yeah. question. I am happy to think about it. But yeah, when I look back, things happening on the ground, at least for us, are different. I mean, there are different efforts and different goals to achieve. At home, on the ground in Yerevan, we try to focus a lot on, again, connecting, you know, uniting, and also bringing more attention. In the case of satellites, it's still the same, but it also a kind of opening new channels towards Armenia.
Right.
So that's the different angle, and I'm happy to see how, for example, now after Sydney, there were people who were like not sure whether they travel to Armenia in summer. Yeah. Now some of them are just checking the dates and agreeing on things that if they have a speaking opportunity or whatever. So that's actually what are the like tangible results of what we do. And that's how we actually this year we realized, I mean, that's another layer that I like changes, you may already see. So the changes for better results. And now we started creating a membership model, which is like for any organization and nonprofits like us. But there we see not only one way for sustaining the organization as a nonprofit, but also, and much more importantly, a more sustainable structure to connect those people we already know, get to know on the go. And it's not just emails lists that we know and can send some introductions, etc. It's more and structured responsibility on us to initiate even more and better, to kind of support the membership base that we create. Mm-hmm. And that's a mechanism. It's just started. I'm happy to sometime later to talk about the results. Yeah. But that's the model that we decided to engage in order to make the really powerful value of those connections
and engages
into
them.
Action.
Right, it engages them
yes.
for long term.
Yes.
More, yeah. But I was curious more from a perspective of the talks and the panel discussions. A lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them are centered around how to both improve conditions for women in tech in Armenia and globally, and to engage more women to join STEM fields and things of that nature. Are there differences in how like those conversations take place in San Francisco versus Armenia? Do you see
differences
like maybe we discuss in Armenia things that were discussed 20 years ago in San Francisco, maybe, or like, are we on a, just in general differences, I guess.
Yeah. Well, this is the area I am happy to see that these problems are common.
They're universal, yeah.
And the conversations are almost through the same vibes, meaning whatever, almost all the problems that we have on the ground in terms of engaging more women, at least engaging more into leadership, those are the same in San Francisco, in Sydney, wherever. Even we are in a better position now, and we know about this different stats of Armenia being one of the leading countries with women participation, and I'm happier than anyone else to announce that, still having the
a lot of work to do.
Yeah, the problems that are behind those numbers, and particularly when it comes to how young girls choose their professions, how they, in a number of cases, don't know even what exists in the world in order to choose those things. Mm-hmm. And I am very happy to be an organization that it that not only shows off whatever is available, but also trying hard to tackle the roots from where it comes. Mm-hmm. Meaning working with families, going into the regions, rural areas, inspiring those girls towards chemistry, physics, whatever, showing them very simple things that there is a profession like data science, there is another profession like chemical engineering, mm-hmm. whatever. So basically we just show the opportunities that are available. We never say that all girls should go there. We of just course, yeah. open up the layers and let them choose. Right. So this is one thing that I enjoy doing
a lot. Right. Choice is the most important aspect. Yep. Yeah. Let's talk about Femino this year. What's to be expected of the third edition of it?
Yeah. Actually, I wanted to mention that, especially when it comes to conferences, when we think about the topics, it may seem that especially the name of the, the organization and conference, it's like female orientation too much or only like something for women only. Not at all. I mean, we are not there for counter discrimination, anything. It's a conference focusing the topic of women, innovation, tech, etc. But it's definitely very much open and happy to engage as many men as possible. And that's one way of starting the change, because when we talk that the sector is male dominated, then we need to have those men engage in order them to later on change some decisions or for better decision making. Right, right. So basically, when it comes to content, it's not the conference is very much on technology, but through the years we have like one important layer being the technology. For example, last year it was metaverse. This year we could not help engaging AI, which is growing so fast, and Gen AI. So basically, we create that layer of technology, like professional layer. And this year is, I love the topic, the theme of the conference we propose. It's Gen AI in action, big data, big impact. So basically, we want to discuss different implementation of Gen AI. I mean, how it works, what it's changing, how we can stop it in a way, but then also how we work with big data and what kind of big impact we can create with that. So these are the main things we are gonna touch this year. But I want to mention that every year we engage different other sides of female engagement in different sectors. For example, last year we managed to engage a number of local female-founded businesses, some discussions and conversations on political participation, economic engagement, etc. Mm-hmm. And that's one important approach to have this diverse topics to relate to technology. The same will be this year. I mean, it's AI, but then we will definitely engage a number of young girls. We are in various interesting partnerships to be announced very soon, how very big organizations now engage women in science development, how they push in their own ways, like engaging more women, and we create a very interesting synergy between organizations, and it will come up very soon in announcements.
Fantastic! And when is it this year?
It's always last weekend of July. This year it's 27 and 28. It's one very difficult thing in terms of logistics because it's a vacation period for locals. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I'm happy to mention that it's a vacation, Armenia vacation right, period for a number of diaspora people. Sure. So it's balance.
Yeah, for sure. And is it at Hamalir again?
No, this year we chose, I mean, we like changes again. This year we're going to a very iconic building on Abovian Street, which is Arno Babajanian Concert Hall, just almost at the Republic Square. We will we are covering all floors of the building. I mean, it's going to be a very interesting setup.
Awesome. Okay. So last weekend of July, people should keep their eyes open for it. Yeah. Before we wrap up, I want to talk about something you touched on earlier. We hear a lot about Armenia being a leader in the world for women in tech engagement and things of that nature. It's always been somewhat of a mystery to me as to what the sources of those claims are. You spoke a little bit about how that data is, it's hard to acquire that kind of data. Give us a sober look of really where we are with the landscape, with those numbers.
That's interesting. I mean, I am happy with these numbers if they are true in the essence. But why I'm saying if, because these numbers, 20, 40, 45%, usually engage also other professions in tech. Companies, HR, admin, marketing, whatever. Yeah. Still, I am happy, and I always keep mentioning that it's still an environment, like equal environment, where others can strive, being, you know, in equal, having enough equal opportunities. But on the other hand, when we talk about participation and why it grows, again, it needs to be pushed somewhere. Mm-hmm. So on our case, in the case of Armenia, one supportive factor from our own experience was the financial attractive financial benefits of the field that women realized. Mm. If I go to tech, if there are so many job opportunities, then let me quit this banking, very boring job. I will survive several months, and after that, first I will be happy as an employee, and then I have the potential of earning much more than in the bank,
right,
or somewhere else.
No offense to bankers.
Yeah, no offense, of course, but like I have that example because bank is something somewhere some people would dream working in, but here, even that, in order to, you know, more financial attractiveness and other potential benefits, people tend to come, and women tend to come to tech. On the other hand, because technology is growing so much, then it cannot keep touching all members of the society, from those who use those technology to those who at some point realize, okay, if this works this way, or if that girl did it, okay, maybe I can do that as well. I mean, sometimes we see and follow practices of girls who go to tech not because it's their passion, but because it's like, why not? And
financially,
it's, again, if financially, and my friend is there, my sister is there, my brother is there, and in a number of cases, brother is there. So basically, it's more diverse is the environment, the easier is the choice to be there. So basically, it's very important. But on the other hand, when we reflect a lot on the practices of Armenia being in Soviet Union, having the roots of, you know, Nicole, women engaged in totally different areas, right, where because the union and the authorities needed human potential, labor, whatever the gender,
right,
you know. From there, for example, my mom, when I go back to her background, then I realized that my mom studied engineering. She never got back to that as it is nowadays. But then she did it because that was something common for every girl to do. So basically, these different developments brought us to a picture now that we have some background. And I'm happy to mention that through our various educational programs, people like my mom sometimes come and say, depending on their initiative, they come and say, oh, well, I have some background in, I was in Polytechnic these years. Maybe I have the potential of finding my way here. So these different factors come to kind of fill up the big picture, how come it is. But one thing is very important to mention here, and it's globally. I was following a research recently done globally that it is harder now. It's not even as difficult to engage women into tech, but it's very difficult to keep them in the field. Mm-hmm. First, it's of course the social roles, depending also on societal norms. And in Armenia, that's something. When women become mothers, wives, then it's not easy to have work-life balance, to be as active as possible. Yeah. But tech is changing hourly now. So basically, if you are not active, not following, cannot catch up for several months, then you feel an outsider, you know, and this is something now being bigger and bigger as a problem. So basically, there are more and more things to cover in a way to not only engage them into studies, profession, career orientation, etc., but also supporting women staying in the field and then continuing their career journey after becoming mother, or for some reason there is a change, and then to keep up. Otherwise, we will manage bringing them to the field, and then at some point we'll not know where these people disappear from the field, you know, whatever the reasons.
So getting them to the field is half the challenge, you're saying?
Yeah, it's half the challenge. So I usually say I would be happy to stop doing this at some point. That would mean that there is no challenge, there is no problem anymore. I mean, I hope at some, I will see that at some time.
Do you think it's like, should the community be doing more to get accurate numbers? Just going back to the root of what I asked, like, should there be like annual studies being done, surveys being done, to see the progress being made?
I would really love to see more stats, to have more stats available. I'm happy to see from time to time different research studies on certain topics, usually done by some international organizations, but they cover usually the main priorities they have from this program or that program, but not the whole picture and not regularly. So I have very good stats for several years back, but then things change, and I cannot follow those numbers. On the other hand, it's not communities that should do, but there should be like more official, stats that are there for any country available. So basically, from there we should start. I mean, it's difficult when you don't have the numbers. Then it's difficult to bring them as facts. We work on grassroots, but still it is important to have that numbers to prove things. I hope we will manage that as well.
And sometimes when the community does it, it's in the interest of the community to represent that data in a certain way. If a more objective sort of third party body is doing it, it's
comes up
more, it's more credible, I would say.
Yes. Yeah.
But going back to what you said earlier about getting them to tech, getting women to tech is only half the battle. The other half is keeping them in tech, because certain cultural things within not only our society, but around the world, make it harder for women to stay in tech after they maybe have families and things of that nature. Is that, do you think, a legislative challenge first and foremost? Like, do things like good paternal leave practices, for instance, solve that? Or are there things in more equitable and better developed ecosystems that have adequately answered that, addressed that question?
Well, that's a good question, actually, because we have a paternity leave.
Even though
some people even don't know about it.
Right.
But
tell people how long it is for those who don't know.
I'm not sure. I don't think that a number of people even practice it, even they know about it. But still, it is from the perspective of legislation. That's
so
very liberal.
That,
we have it.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, and I really keep mentioning it, there are different problems that keep women from growing, even if in the field, even if they reach it. One thing is the leadership. And I love remembering, as an example, one iconic photo of after revolution, new situation, etc. Then we have the prime minister having invited big tech companies, the leaders of big tech companies, about 40 people there, and there is only one woman. And that shows more or less the big picture on the ground. There are enough women in the field, but there is a small representation in the leadership. It's the case all around the world, but why it is in Armenia. From our practice we follow year by year, one thing is vivid. Everywhere, any field, and particularly in a male-dominated field, women spend half of the energy to prove themselves.
Right.
So first level, there is the proving stage. And then after that, then they are, the trust is there, the results are there. Okay, now we can treat you more or less equal. Now you can become a manager, whatever. But even that, to certain level, and there you stop. Because from there on, if there is a chance to change someone in the top leadership, it should be male, usually.
Right, right.
So that's the approach, unfortunately. And on the other hand, going back to the energy, why should I waste 50% of energy of proving myself if I can use that 50 of creating results? So basically, this is one important thing. And maybe if we start creating results from scratch without losing any energy, maybe we will reach some point where there's no way of keeping this woman to reach the highest positions, right?
Great point.
So this is one thing. On the other hand, it is very important to still not just approach women participation as an artificial way of showing off, you know. Oh, well, yeah, we have enough women in our camp. We don't have that problem. Right. I have a number of examples of people speaking this way, but having like very toxic and not at all female-friendly environment in the company. And that should be changed. I mean, you don't need to, or you don't have to have women in your team. You just you need to treat everyone equally. If there is a potential, if there is the trust, whatever, you choose someone, choose by their potential of creating results for you. That's it. We don't push people just artificially. It's not a quota, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just changing your mind that you don't care who is the person, who is the gender.
Sometimes, not just for women in tech, but I feel like for a lot of these issues, we've turned it into sort of like a clapping game where, like, when a company does something or shows something, it's often like in sustainability efforts as well. Like, we've turned it into this thing where so long as they have something that they can put out a press release for, that becomes the thing they optimize for instead of the actual thing that they should
there
do.
There are clapping programs,
yeah, exactly.
You know, to do that. I mean, we are in that program.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. When you were speaking earlier about women spend 50% of their time proving themselves, I remember the statistic. That was such a staggering number. I can't remember the exact number, but I think it was in Sheryl Sandberg's book. She said there's a study that showed that men will often apply for a position or a promotion when they're about 40% of the way ready, and women will apply only after they're significantly overqualified for the position.
That's
really
actually,
goes to show you the cultural issues there.
Yes, yeah. And it's I am happy only in these cases. I'm happy it's cultural, not for like national level, but it's culture in terms of being woman in a field where you know you don't have a seat around the table. You just have this perception, at least. And people like me who don't have the perception and are ready to break those ceilings are not enough. I am happy to see more and more who just go there. I mean, you may imagine that it's not that I don't have a problem every day with some people. It doesn't matter, men or women. But in a number of cases, those are men decision makers who agree or don't agree with whatever you initiate, whatever you offer. But it's just a type of the person that should not stop or should not, should just keep up and set an example. Yeah. It's not that I go because I want to be an example. It's just the nature. And then it becomes, like, naturally, I become an example for a number of people.
For sure. Yeah.
And that's the way to be. And I'm happy to see more and more examples around us from any ages.
For sure. What's something I should have asked you that I didn't?
I don't know. Sometimes people ask about how you have enough, get enough energy, or how you keep being inspired enough. Well, that's something I love saying. That first of all, I have a daughter, and I see. Actually, I don't even teach her what I teach other girls, and I just realized it recently, because I feel that she doesn't need those things, because we live together, and she right. just follows me right. in a way. And when I see her doing it, I mean, when I see her being really strong at the age of 12 now, I really keep being inspired by her as an example of why I'm doing this for so many. And she is one example, and she's going to be an example for others when she grows. And when I keep talking about the energy, which is important to keep up the things that we are in, I usually say we are not in business. I mean, we don't create money. Mm-hmm. That's how we don't get as tired as people who are making money. Because when we create the value for so many people, and we see this energy of that value that they just absorb, there comes the energy back. So this is something that I like visualizing, how it is important to create values, mm-hmm. support creating that those values, and then sit back and enjoy the rewards. Yeah. That's how I feel usually.
I know it's also, it makes it even more difficult, but you have the fortune of being strictly mission driven and not revenue or profit driven or something. Yeah, for sure. Sadat, last question. Where do you hope to see Femino and in general, the environment in Armenia for women in tech in 5 years?
I don't know if it's 5 years from now, but when one day I was asked about like, what would be your end goal? Being it 5 years or whatever, I just stopped at a moment because I don't have an end goal. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a process I am in, and I don't know where it will end up. But when I look into processes and into how I see Armenia and how I want to see the journey of Armenia, especially now into this difficult, turbulent geopolitics, I would really love to see Armenia run by women more on highest level.
Women in leadership positions.
Women in leadership and political leadership, because I would still keep working in engaging more women, girls, and in STEM, but I would really love to change the perspective of highest level decision making, which has never been the case for our country. Mm-hmm. And maybe from there on, we have a new journey. That's how I imagine it, as like someone who is keeping creating and contributing mm-hmm. to the environment, which potentially will reach that stage right. at someday.
Tech is just one of the sort of pillars of glass ceilings that need to be broken.
Exactly.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, I hope you'll come back on to tell us how that goes. Thank you so much, Sadat.
Thank you.